And now, The Low Post.
Welcome to The Low Post podcast live from the Nerd Conference at MIT Sloan, where I am thrilled to be joined by a guy who was one of my favorite players to watch when he was in his prime, one of the all-time NBA characters, and you cannot tell the history of the NBA over the last 20 years without the one and only Meta World Peace. How are you?
I'm doing good. It's really good to be here. It's such a different, you know, world over here at MIT. You know, and it's, I've seen so many different, familiar faces, sports broadcasters that I work with, NBA general managers, owners, players. It's been good.
Quite an arc for you.
Yeah.
Ending up here. So I was just, I saw Jackie McMullen in the break room. I said, I'm having Meta on my podcast. What's your favorite Meta World Peace memory? And she said, go back and watch that press conference after they won the championship. And I went back and watched it. Your jubilation. I had forgotten, like, you're yelling at the people on the laptops in the side room, hey, laptop people, absolutely. Acknowledge me, yeah. Acknowledge me. That's an all-timer. Do you have any, like, memory of that, or were you just like, is that just you're in a haze?
You know, I don't really think about that a lot, but when I go on YouTube and I watch the old clips, it makes me feel good because it was such a pivotal moment in my career because, you know, when I always thought I was going to be a champion. But I didn't do all the necessary things to be a champion early in my career, meaning the professional side of basketball. So I thought like that, I thought just karma would say you're never going to win a title, something you always wanted. And 2010 comes, I put myself in a good situation, and I'm like, wow, I'm very grateful. And that was just so much emotion.
That game seven, you had 20 points.
Yeah.
You hit a three. I just rewatched it with a minute left to put the Lakers up six. Almost, yeah. That kind of ices the game. Is that the biggest shot of your life?
That was the biggest shot of my life. You know, I had one other bigger shot when I was 16 years old, but I mean, it was a sudden death type of game. And then we was tied up going into overtime and first one of five wins.
AAU or what is this?
I was 16 playing in an adult league.
Adult league, okay.
And I have 47 and then so and then like they scored three and we had two and I just came down and shot the three. And I was really young and the crowd went crazy. About maybe 300-400 people in the, you know, in the gym. And that shot reminded me, that Lakers shot reminded me, but it was definitely one of my biggest shots. It was the biggest shot, actually.
What's the best team? Was that Lakers team the best team you ever played on? I mean, I know it won the championship, so it got the farthest. But what's the best? What's the team where you're like, that was a group? Maybe it is that Lakers group that's the best team.
I mean, one will argue the Pacer team was pretty good. That Pacer team I was on was pretty good.
Better than pretty good.
And then the Houston Rocket team. Yao and T-Mac, Kimbe and Shane. That was a hell of a team, so it's hard to say, you know, but Kobe would argue that it's no way those teams were better.
Your other big shot from that playoff run with the Lakers was bailing out Kobe in game five against Phoenix in the conference finals, where Kobe airballs a potential game-winning shot. You catch it, and I rewatched it just now. It's a harder play than I remember because you kind of catch it on one side of the backboard. One side of the rim, and in the air, float to the other side, and all in one motion, launch shot. How the hell did you make that shot? That's a really hard shot.
It was no form. I look at that shot, and it went in, and we won. It was a big game.
Yeah.
Right? But, you know, I look at that shot, and it was like really, it was so lucky. It was lucky, man.
Hey.
Elbow wasn't in. I did not follow through. I just put it in the basket off the glass.
So. Hey, you chased it, and they didn't box you out.
It. Yeah, I did. Yeah, I did chase it, and moved out a couple people out the way.
and if you don't make that shot, you might lose, go back to Phoenix down 3-2.
Yeah, we didn't want to go back to Phoenix down 3-2. And then, you know, we still had game seven, but yeah, we needed that one.
So what's the real story? Maybe we know the real story, but the famous story is that Kobe and the Lakers lose the 2008 finals against Boston. Kobe's showering, trying to wrap his mind around just, I lost to the Celtics. I still haven't won one without Shaq. All these emotions. And somehow in the locker room is then Ron Artest. Mm-hmm. Invades the shower and says to Kobe, I'm going to get you a title. Don't worry about it. Is that actually what happened? How did you get in? I guess if you're a player, you can get in, right?
You could potentially get in a locker room, but not every locker room. So you know, when I went to go see Lamar play, and Kobe, I'm a big fan of Kobe, but we went to go, watch the finals, because what happened was I was with my cousin Marion, and I never been in the finals. So I said, yo, we gotta go to the finals because my career is almost over. 8 years in, but who knows when it's gonna be over. And I said, I need to, and I used to have a lot of anxiety at that time. So I needed to figure out what the atmosphere was gonna be like, because I've never been to NBA finals ever. So I go there just to kind of see how the players are playing, how the fans are acting, how crazy it is in the arena, who's making shots, who's not. And then I was able, as I was in that, in the stands, I was just absorbing everything. You know, and then 2 years later, I was actually in the finals, yeah. You know? Which, so it wasn't a new experience for me. So that's the only reason I was there. And then with Kobe, I wanted to, they lost really bad. Phil Jackson, Lamar Odom, Kobe, I idolized these guys. And I wanted to say hi to Kobe. Kobe was in the shower. And I wanted to leave. I wanted to go back. I was driving to New York. So I didn't want to wait. So I said, anybody see Kobe? You know, and Phil Jackson said, he's in the back. And I said, okay. He was in the shower. He was butt naked in the shower. And I was just like, yo. He was mad because they just lost the finals. Of course. So he turns around and he was like super shocked. Like, why was Ron Artest in the shower? I said, yo, I just wanted to tell you, good game. I got to head out, but I wanted to tell you, good game. And, you know, that was it. Some people said I told Kobe I wanted to play with him.
Yeah.
That wasn't
what I
said.
That's the story. That's the story.
That wasn't what I said.
No.
I just told him, good game. And that was it.
How have you coped with it? Do you have favorite memories that you've leaned on in the aftermath?
With Kobe?
In the aftermath
of
this?
Oh, I was flying to Europe with my wife. Like, he left on the 26th.
And that day?
No. I'm talking about just now.
Oh.
This February? February 26th.
Yeah.
I'm just talking about ways I was coping with it. So I'll give you an example was February 26th, I'm on a plane, we watch a movie, and somebody died at the end. I could not control my crying because I've been suppressing it so much. So it just comes in waves. It comes in waves. And on the plane, literally, and I was like, what the hell am I crying for? And I said, you know, I thought about COVID. This is the only reason I'm crying. It's uncontrollable. So I was glad, you know, it's something you don't cope with. No. I don't want to cope.
No.
You understand? I'm not trying to make it better.
Yeah.
I don't want it to get better, to tell you the truth. So, you know, but time heals wounds. So, you know,
the thing you said during that press conference that hit me right in the gut, which I had forgot about, was you were talking, mentioned the Pacers team. You were talking about Steven Jackson and Jermaine O'Neal, some of the guys on that team, after winning, and you said, you know, I think about those guys.
Yes.
And the fight we had together.
Yes.
And you said, a part of me feels like a coward because I went to the Lakers. What did you just mean? Because I was the last guy to join a great team like that. The word coward, that really hit me.
Well, yeah, when you bail on, when you're playing a team sport and you get one person that has a big ego, and then you bail. Ego's one thing, but then saying I don't want to play with you guys—that's a coward. Because
You're referring to you requesting a trade from the Pacers.
Requesting a trade, and not taking on situations head on. Like if you don't like something, tell them directly. And I developed a little bit more of direct, you know, over the years. But you know, I feel like those guys supported me. They had my back, you know, and I felt like you know I felt like I wasn't as supportive as I should have been. You know, I feel like I wasn't as supportive as I should have been.
Well, so, like, I was reading all these old clips. Why did you request a trade? I couldn't figure that out from reading it.
Listen, you know, I requested a trade that year was because...
This is the year after the Malice in the Palace.
After the Malice in the Palace, you know, and I requested a trade because I couldn't deal with all the pressure, you know, at that time. And then going back with Indiana and playing in the Indiana jersey after the brawl, way too much pressure. So I didn't know how to approach that, saying, hey, I don't want to be here because I needed something different because it's way too much pressure.
Well, and I was telling you in the break room there, I mean, I'm not just saying this because you're here. I remember arguing with my friends at this time because I wasn't covering the NBA then. I was just a big fan. people forget because of the Malice in the Palace and the other famous stories and all this. And like 2002 to 2005, 6, 7, I don't know where you want to bookend it. Like you were, first of all, defensively, forget about it. Like you were just a brick wall at every position, and you were scoring. You look back at the numbers, 21, 20 a game, 38% from three. Like you made an all NBA team. Like for a while, there was a period where you could argue you were a top 10 player in the league. Like that's, people need to remember, like this guy wasn't just a cartoon character. No, it's not just a famous story. It's like this dude could ball.
No, I was definitely a baller. Cause you know, when you put so much effort and time into something, and you know, all the trouble in my career erased a lot of those memories of how good I actually was. I put way too much time into the game not to tell myself how good I was, because they don't really talk about that. If you see a documentary on these athletes, you'll see them dunking on people, shooting baskets, and they don't play those clips of me. So I'm not trying to relive moments, because I really don't care, to tell you the truth. I even get rid of my Instagram every time I get 100,000 followers. Like, I literally don't care about attention. But in terms of basketball, it's something that was such a huge part of my life. So I always got to remind myself how good I was, because I love basketball. I don't see it. I don't see a lot of, you know, when I retired, I didn't see Metal World Peace Retired, you know, moves in Indiana, how good I was at Indiana. They don't show them. Even in my documentary, they didn't show half of the good moves that I made. So,
like you could score.
No, I could,
you weren't just
score.
Like a lockdown defensive guy. You were a 20-point a game scorer.
No, they double team, triple team me in the post. But so I got rid of all my awards. I don't have no awards. I don't really care about the awards, but I just feel like the time that I put into the game, I like to relive the memories of, because it's really hard to be good at something, you know,
yeah.
Let alone a sport, right? So I just like to relive it.
Defensive player of the year award is gone.
That's the only one that's not gone yet, but everything else is gone. My championship ring is gone. I raffled that off.
Mm-hmm.
I just recently gave away two of my, I gave away my defensive, all defensive first team and my all NBA 13 award to two kids. I got three more I'm going to give away, and I don't like to look back. I like to look forward, and now looking at awards, it sends me back too much.
How are you? Because do you feel like the moment, it's not funny. I think it's a real thing. You know, we have a lot of players now coming out and talking openly about their mental health, and mm-hmm. Kevin Love and DeMar DeRozan and several others. And I think it does go back to the moment where you thanked your psychologist after the championship. So like, how are you doing? What do you want people to know about your current state of?
Well, I don't really want people to know anything, but I mean, you know,
you seem great,
but
you
but
got
yeah.
a business we're going to talk about.
No,
in a
yeah, yeah. Cause you know, I don't really. Well, now that we're on the podcast, you know, we're talking, but I don't really like seek as much attention as I used to. You know, when I was younger, I was always trying to do something to get in the public eye. You know, something silly, color my hair, you know, rap, anything to get more attention.
By the way, did you really record a rap song with your 78-year-old neighbor in Indianapolis?
Yeah.
She loves you. She loved it. I was reading old clips, like, she loved living next door to you.
No, she was amazing. So she was a singer, you know. She was older, but back in her day, she had albums. So she was my neighbor, and we had a piece of property in Indiana. It was connected to her property. We put fences up, but we didn't put a fence up towards her house. She could always get to us if she needed us.
That's great.
You know, and she would make the best pistachio cake. Man, she can cook. And we did a song together, and I wish we could have put it out. It was a fun song. She had a great voice, and I haven't had contact with her in like 10 years.
Well, get in contact with her if she's still alive, because she loves it anyway. You were talking about how you used to do these things to seek attention.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, you're young, you know, you're in the limelight. It's like, okay, what, you know, the game is over. The fans are not screaming. So it's like, what can I do today to get more attention, right? That's just a lot of young athletes. Not a big percentage, a small percentage of athletes want a lot of attention.
Talk to me about X versus X, this new company you have, this new business you're starting, because the concept sounds very cool and not like anything I've ever heard before. How did you figure it out, and what is it?
Well, there's a concept that I had, and I need a team to help put it together. So basically, I figured out that a lot of athletes don't really have the opportunity to play sports, and get exposure. Now, you got the NCAA. That's a really good platform. And the NBA is obviously the ultimate platform. You have high school, which is a good platform. But there's a lot of kids out there that don't have the connections to get on the high school team, the connections to get an agent, the connections to get in college, right? On this platform, I kind of democratize it, decentralize it a little bit, and it puts everybody on the even playing field. So if you're good, you'll be able to get exposure.
Yeah. So what do I do if I'm good? If I'm one of those kids, I'm good, and I don't
sign
have
up.
So what? Yeah. What is it? What is how
so
does it
you
work?
Sign up to the app, X vs X Sports, X vs X Sports, coming out in the March. So it's not available right now.
We're
in
beta.
We're almost there. So you sign up, build your profile, and you find games. It's very similar to when Twitter first came out. Remember when Twitter first came out? It was like, what do? I find people? What? What? I remember I signed up to Twitter. I'm like, okay, what do I do now? So it was in beta, right? Twitter was in beta and it had to get users. The users are going to make the app. So when you sign up, you'll try to find games and you can play open runs. If you can't really get a scrimmage game or play in a high school game or play in a college game and you want to get exposure, you're a good player. Nobody knows you play in open runs. You win a game, the game host will press in-game, and everybody gets a win on their profile. Okay? And then as you get more wins, people will start to recognize you. Then you can play in our showcase games directly on the app. Right? In the showcase games, we keep stats. Right? And it'll be stat keepers at the game, score keepers, and those stats uploaded directly on the app. We also have tryouts. So we had one team from Puerto Rico who held a tryout on our platform. So we had a bunch of X vs X players actually qualify for a tryout, and then somebody's getting $5,000 a week.
Wow.
So that was our first partnership with a pro team. Now, with FIBA, we want to be able to work with FIBA, all FIBA teams in Europe, so people will have opportunities to get seen not only in America but also overseas. Everybody don't need the $1 million contracts.
You probably grew up with guys that would use this.
Absolutely. And then retired players can use it too, because retired players are also trying to stay in the limelight and get exposure. You know, so this it essentially plays as an agent, but we're not trying to lock down. You know, we want the agents to actually use the platform.
Yeah.
Yeah, we want them to find players, search out for players, because the players are trying to get, you know, opportunities. And then also, if you want to just be on the platform as a recreational player, you're not trying to get exposure, that option's available.
Just looking for a game.
Just looking for a game, looking for a place to house your stats, looking for a place to get some recognition and get that NBA experience. You know, the app can do that also.
It's kind of a cool idea.
Yeah, it's great.
Let's bounce around the highlights of your career, a couple more. When you mentioned getting traded from Indiana and all that, and obviously the Malice in the Palace is one of the great what-if events in the history of the league.
Yeah.
When you – maybe you don't ever do this, but when that enters your brain today, is there a moment that, like, freezes for you, like, if that had gone differently or if I had done that? Is there any moment you think back on and say, that's the one where it could have turned the other way?
You're saying, well, not really.
No.
You can't really control your destiny.
No, because you foul Ben Wallace.
Mm-hmm.
Ben Wallace shoves you hard.
Mm-hmm.
And that is like, it could have started there. You go on to scorer's table, and it's okay. It's okay. And then just out of the sky.
But everything is destiny, right? You can't predict the future. You can work hard and try to do things and, you know, move things around and try to do things the right way. And if you do things a certain way, then this will happen. If you study hard, you're going to pass. You know, if you shoot a lot, you're going to become a better player, right? You can do that, but then after you become a better player, somebody could throw a bear at you.
Yeah.
You can't really prepare for that. So I never look back. You know, destiny is destiny, and it is what it is.
Are you actually still close friends with the guy? Like to know the beer thrower, John Green, I think his name is.
Yeah, absolutely. He's a cool guy.
You're still in contact?
Yeah, we talked a couple times, you know. We had an incident that was super big in the public. But to him or to me, it was like a fight. Like, he threw something at me, we fight, and it's over. You know, but to the public, it was like a black eye and different things to the sport, which I get. But for me, it was just an incident I had with one person.
My colleague Jonathan Abrams, formerly we were, used to work together, wrote a giant Mouse in the Palace oral history. You didn't talk to him for it, but there are stories from Jack and Jermaine and some others saying, and we get back in the locker room, and people, for you watch the video, you forget that was like a war zone.
You didn't even see half of the angles.
I don't even want to think about it.
You'll see when the Netflix documentary that's coming out, Jermaine O'Neal's doing.
Yeah.
It's stuff. I just did an interview for that documentary 2 months ago. And I'm like, wow.
Really?
It was stuff I've never known that happened. Because I never watched it. I didn't know if somebody actually threw a chair at my teammate. It was so many angles. And I'm like, wow, this happened. So you'll catch me on tape getting like first time reactions.
Wow. Yeah. Well, I just, they tell stories of you all get back in the locker room and, you know, Ron gets, do you think we're going to get in trouble for this? And everyone,
yeah, you know, you get in a fight back home, you're not going to get in trouble. You know, you get in a fight, you know, your mom, I got in a fight. She gonna be like, okay, you know, did you win? You know, so yes, I was like, you think we're going to get in trouble? But you know, this is the corporate world. Absolutely. You're done, buddy.
It was they hammered you guys, and that team, like you said, I mean, that was a really, really good team, as was the Rockets in 2009, your one season with the Rockets. The starting lineup of that team, if everyone had been healthy, you told me before, was probably Aaron Brooks, Tracy McGrady, Shane Battier, Luis Scola, Yao, and you're coming off the bench as the sixth man. Now, you started a lot because everybody was hurt.
Yeah,
all throughout,
I started because T-Mac was hurt.
But that is a badass team. And no, T-Mac got hurt in the playoffs, so before the playoffs, obviously. So.
That was a series. Because on that team, if you really wanted to, you could have put T-Mac at the point. I could have brought the ball. I can guard the point guard. I can guard everything.
You put you, T-Mac, Battier on the floor together,
yeah,
at 2-3-4?
And ooh, everybody can shoot. At 1-2-3.
Yeah, 1-2-3. Put Scola in.
Either
out.
Way.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was that team was a serious team.
Do you think, I mean, obviously you lose to the Lakers in game 7, but you know, without T-Mac, I'm not sure how far you guys go, but do you look back at that team as also like, boy, what if T-Mac stays healthy?
If T-Mac stays
healthy,
who the hell
knows?
Yeah, it would have been really interesting if T-Mac stays healthy. Because I wouldn't have been playing a lot, but I would have been coming off the bench.
I think you would have been playing a lot.
No, Shane Battier would have been playing a lot.
Shane and you on the wing defensively,
yeah,
would have been nasty.
There's only so much room.
Did you really rent a Lamborghini for the playoffs that year?
I never. All my teammates had expensive cars. I've never had expensive cars. So only for the playoffs, I would rent a car.
Just to feel,
I just feel like I want to show up to the arena because all my friends got Rolls Royces and stuff, and I'm showing up in some Tahoe or something. So for the playoffs, I would just rent a car for the playoffs.
Lamborghini sometimes, at least one time.
Yeah, this is.
What color? Red?
White.
White. Interesting.
Yeah, and give it back after.
Interesting choice of color.
Yeah. And luckily, I mean, we lost early. We lost in the second round, so, you know, I just turned it back in.
So not a funny, a non sort of meta world PC story to your point about working hard at your craft. I was texting some of your former coaches, and one of them was an assistant in Sacramento, said to me, the number one thing I remember about Meta, his post-game workouts, he said, we used to go back to the gym after games, and he would shoot and shoot and shoot, and he would have to make 10 threes from every spot on the floor before we could go home, no matter how long it took. Like, and it's like, those are the stories people don't tell. Is that true? Like, after games?
I mean, I was a little bit obsessive with the game, you know, and I wasn't working smart because I was doing a lot of the same things over and over again. But, you know, it helped me with my career, you know. I just wanted to be as good as I can.
Interesting.
When you're playing against Kobe Bryant, man, you got to work, stay in that gym.
Did you really go onto the owner's bus with the Rockets in your underwear?
That was funny. I heard about that story. It wasn't. So they looked like underwears.
In 2000, this is 2009,
this is right
playoffs.
Game 7,
yeah,
right.
Game 7. That's right.
Yeah. So I was actually getting my hair cut, and I didn't want to be late for the bus, so I had these long boxers on. They looked like briefs, but they were boxer shorts, and I had no shirt on. I had my suit in my hand, and I got on the bus. The owners were there, but you know, the owners, usually we take the bus. You know, the players. I didn't think the owners was going to be on the bus. You know, I thought that was, they're never on the bus, but they was on the bus for that game. So I showed up with no shirt on, and you know, and looked like boxers because I had to get dressed. I didn't want
to. You had
to
run. Yeah, you had to get to the game. You are publicly a big Game of Thrones fan. What's your take on the final season?
I don't know. I can't speak on Game of Thrones. They're just disappointing.
There's your take, I guess.
I'm disappointed. I'm not disappointed in the season. I'm disappointed that there's no more seasons.
Oh.
This is my thing. If you build an IP, whatever the case may be, and you're tired, network and producers, give it to somebody else.
You just want to keep going.
I mean, give that to somebody else. We don't really need the producers or networking. We don't need y'all no more. We need Game of Thrones. That's what we need. So sell it and go off in a sunset. Because, like, you can't get us that excited about a show, right? And then now it's over? What?
They all end.
No,
I guess The Simpsons still hasn't ended.
End. They don't all end. Game of Thrones, that's way too. It didn't even do 10 seasons.
No, they squeezed a lot into those last 6 or 8 episodes,
I'm saying,
too.
Like, if y'all don't want to do it no more because y'all worked a lot and... But give it to another network, give it to another producer, and put out more Game of Thrones. We need 2 more seasons. Good
okay.
Lord.
Were you satisfied with the end?
I was very satisfied with the end, but when you know it's coming to an end, it's that.
Okay.
You know there's a lot of Game of Thrones fanatics out there. I'm one of them.
Oh, it was we might not ever have a show like that again where everyone stops what they're doing to watch it.
I don't think that was fair, actually. I don't think that you treat the public like that.
Oh, interesting.
I don't think you treat people who support your show and you end the show. That's another story. I'm highly upset about that.
Is the Hennessy thing real?
No, that wasn't real. That was all fake.
At halftime, halftime was fake?
People make up stories, man.
You said it.
Yeah, but, you know, I was writing a book, fiction, and people made it up.
The Tim Floyd era Bulls could be a book.
Huh?
The post-Jordan Bulls with Tim Floyd as the coach and all the young players. Like, that could be the whole book by itself.
It should make it a book.
That's your first team.
That was my first
team. And I forgot you got traded for Jalen Rose, my colleague at ESPN.
Oh, wow. Jalen's a great guy.
Bulls Pacers trade. That's how you ended up
he
in
gave
Pacers.
Jalen gave me a lot of confidence. He told me one day I wasn't shooting the ball, and Tim Floyd said, "Don't shoot, just play defense." And I'm like, "No." Right? But then I did it. You know, I didn't shoot. And Jalen Rose is like, he's playing with the Pacers. He said, "Yo, you wide open. Why are you not shooting?" I said, "My coach said I can't shoot." He said, "Shoot the ball, man."
All right, Jalen.
And then I started shooting the ball after that. Yeah, he told me, he said, "Shoot the ball, man."
Well, you left a lot longer in the NBA than Tim Floyd did.
I mean,
no offense to Tim Floyd. It's just true. It's just a true statement.
Well, he's a great defensive coach. Tim Floyd, he was one of the reasons why I was a great NBA defender, definitely.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely.
So even at that age, you're still learning fundamentals, tendencies. Yeah, what is he teaching you?
Tim Floyd had these different strategies on how to teach individual defense. I guess any coach could have told me, but I was locked in. I was paying attention. And I had Tim Floyd at a young age, and, you know, he had some techniques that stayed with me for a long time. 20 years ago, so I don't quite remember.
Yeah.
But I remember him being a big influence on my defense.
It's interesting because it's funny because some coaches get beat up, but particularly coaches who jump from college like he did to the pros for doing too much fundamentals, too much technique.
Yeah,
NBA players don't need the fundamentals. They don't want the fundamentals. But sometimes you hear stories of the coaches who thread the needle. It's like, you know, it was helpful for me to drill down on that stuff.
Tim is great. I love Tim. But, you know, Tim was put in a bad spot. Tim was put in a bad spot because I don't think he had control.
Interesting.
I mean, you know, I don't think he was able to do what he really wanted to do. I don't think he had a shot.
And following Phil.
I don't think it was following Phil. I don't think he was able to do what he wanted to do as a coach.
Would you ever coach? I think you've talked about
coach.
It before. Yeah,
I coach in my app.
Yeah.
I coach all the time. I coach a lot of players on my app. People always ask me what I want to coach. I'm doing so much basketball. You know, we're going after 23 million basketball players in America, and a lot of that is high school players. And a lot of that we're trying to give guidance on where to play and what to do. It's a lot of basketball coaching that I'm doing. Absolutely.
That's cool. I think you'd probably be good at it. You know the game. You know the craft of it.
You know what? If I'm good at it, it's cool, and I would love to be good at it. But I think I really enjoy it. You know, so that's the main thing. I really enjoy coaching. I don't know, basketball. Not playing is great, making shots, but coaching is great too.
Well, you had a hell of a run in the NBA. One of my favorite guys to watch in your prime. And I know you got to go. You got a lot of obligations here. But X versus X, it's coming out at the end of March. It sounds like a cool app, and it seems like you're doing great. And it's been good running into you. Good seeing you.
Absolutely, man. Thanks for the time and plugging my app.
There you go.
And we got LA Times is coming in as investing in the app partnership. We got the chairman of FC Barcelona out of Spain, chairman of Wix, founder of SurveyMonkey StumbleUpon has come in. A lot of other people has come into the app. They see the vision. It's more than just a basketball app. We actually have a bigger plan, but I need those type of people involved so I can service the basketball players that I want to service in America, start in America, and then hopefully go on global after that. But
well, I think it's cool that you're staying involved in the game because, like I said, people remember the whatever stories, but a lot of players look at you and your perseverance and your openness about your mental health stuff and say, you know, that guy's has had a lasting influence on the NBA, and it's good to see you sort of staying in basketball.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you for your time. Meta World Peace, everybody.
Thank you.